Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What should a city skyline look like at night? If many of us like the glow of lights shining through skyscraper windows, is it reasonable to assume we will love cityscapes outlined in rainbow colors or transformed into multi-story display screens? As light-emitting diodes, LEDs, are becoming ever less expensive and more reliable, they're being incorporated into building design in seemingly limitless ways, transforming cityscapes in ways that delight some and disgust others, but never fail to draw the eye. Joining us to talk about all this, we have two guests. Jerome Weeks is a reporter and producer for KERA's Art and Seek and winner of the John G. Flowers Award for Excellence from the Texas Society of Architects. Mark Lamster is professor of architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington and architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News. He'll be speaking tomorrow night on the built environment in Dallas at the Horchow Auditorium at an event planned by the Dallas Museum of Art and the Dallas Architecture Forum. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been lighting up our cities artificially for hundreds of years. We've had neon for almost a century. What is it about LED that suddenly takes us into a brand new universe?
It's cheap. It's cheap, and it's much more reliable than neon, particularly in North Texas, where hailstorms smash the neon regularly. I mean, any building, any company that goes out of business and has neon and no one's keeping it up, it's ruined within a year or two. It's, as we know with the Bank of America, the argon tubes had to be replaced all the time. LEDs don't have that problem, and they're programmable. You can have a computer program them to do all sorts of different things. So they give you a lot of pizzazz for a lot less money and a lot less energy, too.
In general, Mark, do you have specific criteria for assessing what is mediocre lighting design and what is really great lighting design?
Well, I think you have to judge it by the building, the individual building, and you would hope that the design for any particular building will accentuate the qualities, the architectural qualities of that building, and also bring something special to the city around it.
Would you add anything to that, Jerome?
I would point out that what is notable about Dallas architecture recently, if you think of the significant buildings, the Wiley, the Winspear, the Perot, the Nasher, even going back to the Fountain Place, none of them are lit up at night. Hmm. None of them have big neon. And they're all, you know, tremendous buildings. It's generally the big commercial ventures, the look at me, look at me, look at me. It's essentially a giant billboard. And so they tend to be, many of them, simplistic, kind of crass. They're meant to be eye dazzlers. I once described the Bank of America building to a friend who had never seen it and what its effect was. And he said, oh, it won. And that's really the sense of so much of it is how to overpower everyone else in the neighborhood. So there is that level to a lot of it. But that doesn't mean it's all bad, I think. The strange thing is that it can transform a building at night. It can also make you more aware of the shape and architecture of a building that you tend to take for granted to a degree. During the day, you see other things, and then at night, the building becomes transformed. That's different.
You know, Mark, you said something interesting about, you know, ideally, good lighting design really enhances the architectural features of a building. It would seem that now maybe we have more buildings being designed specifically to highlight the lighting. Is there anything inherently wrong with that as long as the building works for the purposes for which it was built?
I don't think so. I think it's exciting. I think it's a whole new dimension that architects can work with and play with to bring some kind of vibrancy to the urban environment. Now, in the other direction, it can be a disaster if it's handled poorly, but that's the truth with anything. It's just an exciting new development in the modern toolkit for the designer. Obviously, the Omni is sort of the touch point here, the most controversial of all the local buildings.
For people who haven't seen the Omni yet or seen it at night, can you describe it for us?
Well, it's a curved, horizontal convention hotel, and it is pretty much lit from ground to roof line. And so it becomes a giant billboard of itself, and it's programmed with LED, so it can become almost like a television. It's not the first building like this. There are buildings like this in other cities around the globe. But it has been quite controversial here.
The first time that I saw the Omni, it did occur to me that it takes something that large to take our eyes off the tiny screens that we have in front of us or in our hands most of the time.
I'm surprised there aren't more car accidents at night because of it. When they were first testing that the LED system, I remember driving on 30 heading towards downtown, and they were just putting up large numbers, and the numbers would float across the screen, and it was so ghostly to see the skyline at a distance and see this giant white one march across. And I just watched it. I nearly drove off the road trying to look, because it was the first time I'd seen the Omni do that, and it was so fascinating and so mysterious looking. And now sometimes you'll have it. Unfortunately, a lot of that is designed to highlight those companies that are at the convention center. So you get corporate logos and things. And so it has that sort of, it's just another billboard commercial. On the other hand, they have a random assortment of, it's not really videos. You have to understand it's strings of LEDs on each floor. So the resolution is quite crude. The Video Fest last year put up what it called Expanded Cinema, when they got a number of artists to create animations for that. And you had to be at a certain distance for it to really work right. If you go too close, you lose all resolution and you can't see. It's like putting your face up against a TV screen. You can't figure out what's going on. If you go too far away, it's kind of small. It loses the effect. So they had to find the right place for viewers. So it's at the moment, it's a kind of crude system for really transmitting video motion images. I find the potential there quite fascinating. I mean, if you see other cities at night that have incorporated that kind of thing in other LED designs, things like the Shanghai or Hong Kong, it looks like they're trying to contact aliens, other planets. The things are so bright, they're so illuminated, they're so dazzling. That it's really sort of amazing. It's kind of overwhelming. And the Omni can be like that. If you go, you'll see, if you go downtown to a couple blocks away from the Omni, you'll see people gathering at street corners, just standing there gawking at that stuff. It's hard to deny the optic impact of that thing.
Well, the problem for me is it's become just a crass, giant billboard advertisement, which isn't what it should be. I mean, the city... If someone came to the city now and said, I want to erect a billboard downtown and it's going to be the size of a giant building and it's going to be have, you know, day glow at night, you're going to be able to see it from Arlington, you know, I think the city would say, no, absolutely no way.
But you haven't been in Dallas long, have you?
Well, yeah. Believe me, I'm for a little ostentatious lighting design. I generally have no problem with it. I think the issue here is that it's just become a billboard, and it's got this amazing ability to be an art project. You know, if you look at some of the buildings, especially in Europe, there's a Torre Agbar in Barcelona, building designed by Jean Nouvel. There's an amazing office tower. The office tower itself isn't so amazing in Brussels, the Dexia Tower, but the lighting design, same principle. But they've had artists sort of come and create this sort of the lighting programs, and they're beautiful and staggeringly gorgeous, and they're not just there to sell you something besides, you know, that the making you aware of that the building is there and selling the city broadly. But, you know, it's something crass, I think, just to see, an ad for what happens to be going on. Or, I believe me, no one loves America more, but sort of the waving American flags. And, you know, it's I think we can be a little bit more creative and a little bit better with what that design is showing us.
I agree completely.
How is it more bothersome on a building than it is on any number of, changing LED billboards that we have along 30, which people may or may not love, but don't sort of bristle against in quite the same way?
Well, the scale here is, the scale is city scale, whereas, you know, billboard scale is billboard scale. So a billboard is designed to be, a commercial advertisement along a place that's aimed intended for it, and here is an entire building that's been turned into an advertisement. And of course, you could say that all buildings in skyscrapers are advertisements, and that's really what anytime you light a building in any way, the green argon, say, of Bank of America, that is an advertisement for the Bank of America. And Patrick Kennedy, frequent writer on the urban scene, I think in D Magazine, he compared it to like a fat stacks of cash. Which Bank of America, has had trouble maintaining. The principle is that you put light on these buildings to make an ad for the building, to make an ad for the city, to represent the city as a whole, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
People forget that there were regulations of billboards there in the 60s and 70s. They were trying to build billboards. They were called superboards. They were huge along freeways. And this was the part of Lady Bird Johnson's beautification programs and things that was trying to push billboards back away from freeways so they didn't have visual clutter and that kind of thing. And with the advent of LEDs and computer programming, the billboards have become, I think, much more, again, a driving distraction. They can really – there are certain limitations. They're not supposed to change faster than 20 seconds or something like that, so you don't just sit there in your car and try and read this thing as it keeps going around and around. But I think the point is that to have a 20, 24-story building in the middle of downtown, the cityscape, makes a statement about the city as much as anything else. There are buildings downtown that have giant billboards, those super boards like the iPhones and things, the giant images. They're not lit up except reflectively. But they do transform flat, boring buildings with some sort of image. It's still not the same thing as having this neon bright monster in the city. It can be dazzling. It can be gorgeous. But most of the time, it's kind of pedestrian, like the buildings that, somewhat inspired by the Bank of America, just settled for, oh, I can outline myself too. And mm-hmm. You now see a square. There's got to be something, as Mark said, there has to be something more creative than this.
I thought about who gets lucky when someone takes a photograph that they're going to put on a coffee mug that you buy at the airport or whatever, whose ad happens to be on the Omni at that time. And do they go back in and sort of, airbrush that out so it's a little more neutral, or does it just sit there and that's the one?
I don't think they airbrush anymore, Chris. I think it's
Photoshop.
All photoshopped.
Yeah. I know. I'm dating myself.
Yeah. I think that, as I said, they do have a regular program of things. So it's this kind of, it reminds me of lava lamps and psychedelic light shows at concerts.
Which didn't last forever. Maybe we're getting spun up about something that is a temporary phenomenon.
It's possible. Well, I think the idea of a bright, shiny city is something really appealing and appeals to not just people in buying postcards. But, I was just watching Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football, whatever, the Giants-Cowboys game the other night. And, of course, TV comes in and they have these fabulous blimp shots of the Dallas from above. And it looks great. Looks great. The dazzling city from above. The trick is, is it just lipstick on a pig, right? What's down there beneath the lights? To me, the one that the Bank of America one is disturbing, and the one that's even more problematic for me is the One Arts Plaza red void.
It changes color too.
I've never seen anything but red. Yeah. It's just hollow.
We're talking about lighting and urban architecture with Mark Lamster, who's professor of architecture at UTA and architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Jerome Weeks, reporter and producer for KERA's Art and Seek, and winner of the John G. Flowers Award for Excellence from the Texas Society of Architects. If you'd like to join us, call in now to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about urban lighting and architecture. We're speaking with Jerome Weeks, who is a reporter and producer for KERA's Art and Seek, and architecture professor and critic Mark Lamster. He'll be speaking tomorrow night on the built environment in Dallas at the Horchow Auditorium at an event planned by the DMA and the Dallas Architecture Forum. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Mark, I know you've got just a little bit more to say about how you feel about what you call the Red Square at One Arts Plaza.
Yeah, the Red Square and also the Bank of America Argonne, to me, speak about a way of illuminating buildings which is very diagrammatic, and there's no dimensionality to it. They're almost, especially Bank of America, it almost becomes like a child's diagram of what a building would look like at night instead of drawing it out in three dimensions. But what really strikes me, you know, coming down Ross Avenue into the city, when you look up and you see One Arts Plaza and it's that red, I've only seen it red, I'm new to town, this red square, and it's just so empty. It's just empty. It's this void. And to me, it's just, it's so sad. It's almost speaks to the void of what's happening downtown. It's become this sort of sad symbol that I wish, it's almost not true. There's some energy there. There's some, we're trying to build energy in the arts district, and instead it's sort of like got this empty hole there. It really just, it doesn't work for me.
I find it sort of enigmatic. If you're at a seat at a distance and you can't see One Arts Plaza, it's this strange square floating with no connection in the sky. And it's just like, why? Why that?
A billboard with there should be like a Coca-Cola symbol in there. I don't know what's going on.
You wouldn't like that better. Come on.
I'm not opposed to a little bit of
I mean, the New York Times, the Times Square and the in Tokyo, I forget the name of square in Tokyo. There are very few places on the planet that have that sense of like frozen skyrockets. Especially if you come up out of the subway in New York and it's at night and you look up at the Times Square, you get the Coke and all that kind of thing. It's really kind of amazing. But if anyone has ever stayed in a hotel in the area, it's exhausting. It's visually exhausting to see that all the time. It's just, it's retina burn.
Are these LED displays designed so that residents of the buildings are not affected by them? Are they sort of shaded from the windows?
I don't know, actually.
I've been wanting to stay in one of the hotel rooms in the Omni to see what exactly it's like to try and sleep there. I believe they are shielded so they are not, glowing at you. The another issue is how they glow at you if you're in the neighborhood or facing it. And I do understand that that has become something of an issue for some of the loft spaces and other apartments that are across the town from it.
Maybe think of the Seinfeld where Kramer is living outside the Kenny Rogers Roasters and he can't get any sleep. I mean, I wonder if it's that bad or if, I mean, and who decides what's too much?
Well, again, we have that brings us to the Museum Tower controversy of, light shining directly down into your neighbors. And, this is a question, living in a city means compromises, that you're never going to be completely happy with your neighbors. And part of what you give up to live in the city is, this dream of perfection, that everything's always going to be perfect. And you make trade-offs for that, which is being close to other people has advantages. It's in connections, in excitement, in all the other fabulous things that a city can give you. And then there's the line drawn where nuisance or slight aggravation becomes a real urban detriment. And, I guess you could say a museum tower crosses that invisible line or sort of doesn't even cross it. It sort of raise it into submission and with glare, but burns a hole in it.
What about this? When we're talking about buildings that are lit up at night, in neighborhoods where maybe the surrounding structures are not lit in the same way or not sort of outlined, your eye can't help but go to the thing that is lit up. And so there's almost this is probably going too far to say symbolic annihilation of the other architecture, but you really don't look at what surrounds those buildings.
Well, it's, as I said earlier about the Bank of America winning, part of what's driving a lot of the recent explosion in LED, the use of LEDs, is capitalist competitiveness. It is a case of that energy, and it's no accident that the cities that are really booming with lights at night tend to be centers of energetic business. It's, as I said, Shanghai, Hong Kong, New York, London, Dallas. It's places like that that they're kind of bastions of this sort of thing. And so, in terms of commercial lighting, in terms of commercial buildings, that is part of the point. And it's a very cheap sort of ego fix.
But that's our history here too, and it's been great. You know, if you think about it, first of all, Dallas is an energy city, so you know, let's put some of that energy onto the skyline. And if you want to think about this, the lights are just an outgrowth of architectural ornamentation, you know, and it started here with, I guess, the Oriental Hotel, which was taken down to become the Adolphus Hotel, which is just like this great fancy, you know, Frenchified Baroque craziness. And then that gave us the Magnolia and its crazy, you know, decoration and its fantastic neon Pegasus. So, and we love those buildings. Those are fantastic. Those are the things we value. So to me, that's all part of what Dallas is. Dallas, you know, you don't want Dallas to just become, you know, just boring, general, you know, dark, conservative place. I mean, a place should be what it is and celebrate its own character. And Dallas's character is to be a little ostentatious, to be a little showy. And its history as an energy capital, it makes sense to go for it on the skyline, you know. But that can't replace, you know, we're having this conversation about in a way it's the classic Dallas conversation, talking about how things look instead of talking about the more important matters about, you know, why is the city so divided, how come so many people here live in poverty. We've sort of created this city that's surrounded, destroyed by its highways. Our downtown is completely suffering. There's, you know, parking lots and empty lots everywhere. So we have all these really, really serious urban issues, and instead we're arguing about, you know, is the argon on the Bank of America Tower too bright, which is like a little bit – it's a fun argument, but it's not really the most important argument for Dallas.
It would be interesting for an artist to go into one of the more troubled neighborhoods in the city and sort of light it up in the same way that you see some of the big downtown structures lighted and, you know, compare the response to those.
Right. We're not talking about what's happening in, you know, Pleasant Grove right now.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the interesting things that came out of the Dallas Center for Architecture panel last year. Lighting designer Scott Oldner told this story about how he and his company were, hired by the city to take a look at the code, the zoning for, we're talking the regular kind of lighting, pedestrian safety, that kind of thing. And they did a great study on this, examined what could be done, how to just regularize it. We know this kind of practical lighting helps decrease crime. It increases safety. It makes things more attractive. People prefer to walk in the light than the dark, that kind of thing. And eventually the city came back saying, we'll let the developers decide. So it, in a way, what Mark was saying earlier about Dallas is true of America in general. You have the neon flash going on, and right next to it you have this dark neglect.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go on the phone now to Tom in Dallas. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Great, thank you.
Good. Thank you so much for the conversation, because it's really needed in discussing, you know, the benefits of downtown and also the detractions in downtown. One of the things I was wondering is downtown ready for solar to help, you know, cut costs? And how about rooftop gardens? Are we in a position to start, you know, looking at possibilities in that way? Those are two things. And I just wanted to make a comment. I've been in commercial real estate for 34 years in this town. And if you were here 15 years ago, downtown, it would have been putting lipstick on a pig. But downtown is back now. And there's so many projects going on right now, so many things building up the downtown area that I think, you know, it surely has some blight on the edges, but even those edges, like the Cedars, are starting to revive. And stand on top of the Nilo Hotel now, and take a look around, and it's a really amazing thing seeing what improvements have come in just, you know, 10 years. And I know it's hard coming from the outside seeing our town, but if you'd seen it before in the last 10 or 15 years, you'd really think that it was great compared to that.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Tom. Guys, you want to respond to that?
I don't know about the practicalities of using solar to actually try to light up, you know, a neon or an LED display. I don't know enough about if you can store enough energy to light it up at night, particularly for a whole skyscraper. I'm sorry, I don't know enough about that.
Well, what about to Tom's point that the downtown really has come a long way, and that you know, if lighting is seen as a reflection of sort of celebrating some progress that's been made, maybe it's not such a bad thing.
It's a good thing. You know, there's two sides to the coin that Tom raised. Yeah, Dallas downtown has come a tremendous way. Look at Clyde Warren Park. It's been a tremendously transformative for the city. On the other hand, vacancy rates are really high downtown. There's still empty buildings. The population of people living downtown, it's great, but it's not growing at the rate it should be growing. It's growing very slowly. And there aren't the amenities that people need here. There isn't the street life people need down here that would draw more and more people here. I think people want that, and it's possible to get to that point where more and more people are living and working down here. So the questions for Dallas are how to build on the progress that it's made. And those are tough issues. They involve, you know, hard questions, you know, political will, money, all that stuff.
I think Clyde Warren Park is an interesting example because it's not simply successful, I think, because it's, you know, a piece of greenery, a piece of, you know, real estate you can actually walk around and enjoy yourself on in the middle of downtown. It's actually one of the things that downtown Dallas desperately needs, and that's connective tissue. I've often argued that Dallas actually has the makings of a great downtown equal to Seattle's or even San Francisco's, if you think about it. I mean, we have the giant stadium. We have the Arts District. We have Farmers Market. We have things like that, but they're separated by, you know, three quarters or a mile of just vast concrete. And what used to connect those things were lots of two-story tall storefronts, shops and things. And so it wasn't this death march to go from, say, the Arts District to the West End to, or from the Arts District to Uptown for get something to eat or to go shopping. And that's the problem, is that everything is sort of spread out. It's very hard to make those connections, to make that fill in. But that needs to be that when it happens, when you do have something like Clyde Warren Park, it's like this discovery. Oh, my gosh, this stuff works. You can walk. You can see things. You can do stuff. There's been for too long, there's always been a reason to go to downtown, but there's often been no reason to stay and to linger. And that's what you need to keep a city going.
Who should get to decide how much light is appropriate and where? Are city regulations deciding some of this now? And are city planners the best people to tell developers and architects this many lumens is okay and this many is too many?
I should. Next question.
Well, assuming that's never going to happen, Jerome, what do you think about that?
Well, every city should have a planning board and with ordinances about how much of this is, how much of that is acceptable. But you know, skylines are something where you want as much freedom as possible. You know, if you look at the great skylines of the world, they're made by sort of unfettered capitalism,
Chrysler
building. Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay. And you know, there are places that we need to restrict people and their creativity, but that maybe isn't one of them. So, it's like it's one of these questions that, you know, we need them to do better on the ground. We need them to do better at street level to make Dallas a place where people can walk and want to come and can shop and can eat and want to walk around. And what they want to do up at the top, well, you know, knock yourself out.
It's the fancy hairdo up there. Well, I could see a certain restriction as a kind of baseline. In other words, you do not leave this city block in pitch black darkness, and you do not put up something that is so bright, so dazzling that it's injuring people. I could see that. Beyond that, it's mostly practical issues of what do you have, how tall is this, and those things are often in the code. I could see, as again, basic safety issues, safety regulations, that kind of thing. But beyond that, as Mark said, it's what are you going to say? We like blue. We don't like red.
Let's not only talk about the negative aspects. Let's talk about some of the positive. You know, I think the Merck clock tower on the Merck, relatively recent job, looks great. I see it out my window. Love it. Daughter loves it. You know, it's great. Looks good. Benefit to the city. So. Mm-hmm.
I think it looks like a cute little Art Deco robot with the clock face and the sure. radio antenna on top and everything. It looks like something out of Futurama. I think it's quite cute. Everyone loves the Pegasus that used to be the beacon for the city. I mean, you used to be able to see it from White Rock Lake. It was the tallest building, the tallest sign. Partly, I think we like the old style. At least I do. A lot of the old school kind of neon. The Greyhound bus station downtown is
beautiful.
Beautifully done.
Some of the building is beautiful. I wish that Greyhound would pay a little bit more attention to it. There's some crummy like signage that they've tacked up onto it. It's really a beautiful, beautiful building, and wow, it could be a great amenity for the city.
And the Esplanade,
just a little bit.
The Esplanade at Fair Park at night is gorgeous. The light when used right can blossom for a city.
We're talking about urban lighting and architecture with Jerome Weeks, reporter and producer for KERA's Art and Seek, and Mark Lamster, professor of architecture at UTA and architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News. He'll be speaking tomorrow night on the built environment in Dallas at the Horchow Auditorium. The event is co-sponsored by the Dallas Museum of Art and the Dallas Architecture Forum. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about urban lighting and architecture with Mark Lamster, who's professor of architecture at UTA and architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Jerome Weeks, reporter and producer for KERA's Art and Seek, winner of the John G. Flowers Award for Excellence from the Texas Society of Architects. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. I do have to ask this because everybody loves, I shouldn't say everybody, but many people really love the Pegasus, right? Do we love it because it's been around for a long time? Like if the Geico Gecko went up on a building across the street, would we recoil in horror?
If it was beautifully done, I don't think so. I mean, I initially, when I looked at the Pegasus and knew that it's, you know, an oil company logo, and I thought, oh, that's perfectly appropriate. The Dallas biggest icon is an oil company logo. I mean, most people forget that it really was for the Magnolia and Oil Company originally. But it's a tremendously elaborate and I think quite elegant looking thing. I like it. It depends entirely on just how you do it. I mean, originally the Geico Gecko ads were kind of funny. Now they're getting overdone, but they were kind of clever and funny. So it's how you do it.
Well, as everything passes into history, we sort of absorb it into our cultural mind bank.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just the way we operate. And that's why it's so dangerous to start tearing things down, even the things that maybe we think we don't like, because in 10 years we'll realize that, wow, we really did like that.
I was in San Francisco over the summer, and they pointed out in Haight-Ashbury this TV tower that everybody hated when it went up. And then a few years ago, they wanted to take it down, and it's become such a part of the neighborhood that people fought to keep it there, even though I guess it no longer functions for its original purpose.
Well, the ultimate, you know, story about that is the Eiffel Tower, right? You know, they're going to put up the Eiffel Tower, and every, you know, intellectual in Paris came out to tell you what a catastrophe this was going to be for the city. And now, of course, it's the symbol of the city. So, you know, this giant industrial tower, what does it do? It doesn't do anything. It's an ad. It's a this. It's a that. So it's going to destroy the world, you know. But, you know, give it a little time.
The same thing, essentially, with Fair Park. That was, those buildings were originally temporary. No one intended to keep them. And now it's an amazing collection of buildings. It is the only pre-World War II festival site like that that still exists. The Columbian Exposition in Chicago, all the ones in Europe were bombed flat, the Nuremberg, that sort of thing. And so architectural historians from all over the world come and take a look at that to see how it was laid out, what these Art Deco buildings looked like. And they were all supposed to be gone. You know, they were originally just iron and plaster.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next on the phone to Dan in Plano. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I was calling to see if in this discussion y'all were considering the Dark Sky Initiative, where you try to block the light so that it goes down and not up, and you can still see the stars.
Thanks for your call.
Good point. I'm a big city kid, so I've never seen the sky until I get out of the city much. I understand people who have that longing that all this light pollution what it causes. I understand that. But cities are kind of built for people. That's really why they exist. I would be happy to see all the suburbs go dark and so you could see the night sky. But I don't see it as a practical solution in downtowns.
It's a big issue, light pollution. I think it comes more from the sprawl than from the few icons in the city that are going to get that will be lit up. And you know, again, one of the great things about Texas is it's big. It's really, really big. So you know, that's why we have Big Bend.
I have wondered, for people who really sort of embrace all the lighting in downtown and they like the brightness, you know, if attitudes would change if this became the fad in residential neighborhoods. You know, we have this great love and tolerance for holiday lighting because it's a month out of every year. But if, you know, if the lady next door wants a 4th of July display and an Arbor Day display, suddenly that becomes really hard to live with.
I don't know. Again, that's probably, especially with things like homeowners associations, I bet that's not an issue in many places. It simply would not be permitted.
But I think that's one of the fun things. You know, again, here we get to the greatness of humanity and our differences and, you know, celebrating ourselves. You know, a skyscraper is a celebration of one company and then a city. And then on, you know, Christmas, holiday time, whatever it is, also Halloween, you know, people just take it to them upon themselves to show their own color, fly their own flag. And that's great. I just think it's great. So, you know, obviously, I don't think we have to worry about it being all the time because we have local ordinances that preclude too much craziness. But it's good to see. It's good to see people take interest in their environment. That's great. That's what we want. That's what we want downtown too.
We have an email here from Dave in Alvarado who wants to know what you think about the lighting of architecture in downtown Fort Worth.
Now, see, Fort Worth really, for the most part, followed the "I'm going to outline the building in white." I mean, it's, a lot of it is really very generic looking, unfortunately. Their Omni Hotel is cool. They also have a terrific God, I forgot the name of it. It's a lighting architect who lit essentially the parking garage near the Omni Hotel down there. And that's really quite beautiful on a street level. But overall, if you look at Fort Worth, there's far too many bland sort of generic white outlines.
So is generic worse than garish?
Well, if the whole point is look at me, generic is worse than garish, I have to say.
What do you think, Mark?
Well, you know,
not that there's nothing in between.
Well, that's the big question. You know, there's the architecture of genius, and then there's the architecture of bureaucracy. In order for some things to stand out, some things have to be ordinary. So the question is, what some buildings we don't want to be brilliant, and some buildings we want to be brilliant. The trick is knowing which ones to make shiny and which ones that need to recede a little bit.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. What kinds of arguments are architects and lighting designers having among themselves about the ways that this should be done? Because I imagine that, people who have designed buildings that really make great use of lighting, and by great, I'm not making a value judgment here, but saying quantity-wise, if you work on a project like that, you're going to get behind it, right? And if you have chosen not to, then it might be because you find it really disturbing.
I wonder about those buildings that were designed from the get-go with the lighting in mind. It's only happened recently.
Versus the retrofitted.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Versus something where it's just augmented and we stick this on afterwards. They don't necessarily look any better. Like the Hunt Oil Building on Woodall Rogers, I think is a clunky, ungainly building. It seems to be made from different parts. And at night, it's a clunky, ungainly building that is really kind of hideous with all the different lights going on there. And that one seems to have been designed, built with this thing, with those surfaces, that lighting system in mind. It didn't help at all.
To me, it looks like a giant one of those 1990s, a home stereo, mini stereo system. And then I always look at it and I wonder, from afar, wondering where you push to get the CD to eject. And, it's got the lights, they come on, they go up and down. It looks a little bit like like the graphic equalizer, mm-hmm. and then the fountains. Mm-hmm. That building has so much going on. It's they need to listen to Mies van der Rohe.
It's really nice, though, from the inside. More. If you've been in the sort of upstairs space where they have like a two-story kind of gallery space, and I don't know, I suppose it needs to work on both levels.
That's great. It's nice that it's nice inside, but the problem is most of us have to experience it from the outside, and especially from Clyde Warren Park, where it's a sort of ungainly, dark, monolith, overbearing on the park. So it's a little bit sad for the park that it's got these unhappy twins. It's like Laurel and Hardy, or Abbott and Costello. One is like this giant bright thing on one side with Museum Tower shining into it, and then on the other hand is like the Darth Vader black hole, little short and stubby, but still looming over it. You can't win for losing.
I'm not going to jump in there, but surely someone likes it. That's the I suppose that's the thing about anything that we all have to look at every day, right? We're all going to respond to it in a different way, and it's impossible to – maybe we're arguing about the wrong thing, because it's really impossible to create a cityscape that everyone sort of gives a contented sigh and says, this is exactly what it should be.
Well, one of the probably – one of the most significant things about architecture is that we all have to live with it. I mean, you don't have to go to the theater to see that play. You don't have to go see movies, museum exhibitions or anything, but everyone has to live with the architecture. So you often have tremendous amounts of opinions, differing opinions about it. Some people like the light, the color, the just the activity, the sense of energy, whatever. You're going to get that. You're going to have people like just about anything, I suspect. Some people actually like billboards along freeways, because if you give them a vast landscape to drive through, to them it's instantly boring,
But that differentiation is good. That's what makes a city great, right? Some people like this, some people like that. Each one of those buildings is another institution, person expressing themselves, and that cumulative expression is what gives a city its character. And that's why people come to cities, to be around other people who have something to say, to bring something to the table that's of value. They don't all work. They're not all going to be great. But together, you hope they somehow work and create a whole that is a place that you want to be.
Does adding significant outdoor illumination to one building put pressure on the neighbors to do the same?
Absolutely. Absolutely, especially here, you know. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, got to keep up with the Joneses. Got to keep up with the Joneses. That's how skylines are built. You look at, you know, the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building in New York, and sort of like the great model example of competing skyscrapers. But here, you know, here too, you know, someone's got it. I want to have that too. There's no more natural impulse in life. And in Dallas, I think that's a supernatural impulse.
And it's also interesting that not simply for the buildings themselves, but the immediate competitors, but the building around them. I mean, those buildings, particularly if they're residential, the real estate people sell those views. I mean, that's part of the draw, is to live here and look at that, you know. And so in many ways, they are augmenting the value of a particular view, a particular angle on a cityscape. We put this here and everyone around, you know, wants to take a look, wants to move there to see that.
It's a good thing, too. It can be. It's not necessarily a good thing, but overall, you know, I got to keep up, got to do something else, got to do more. You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as we're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, too much of Dallas history was basically bulldozing everything and starting
right,
over again.
Right.
And I realize that cities are great engines of destructive progress. But in the wonderful thing about cities like Fort Worth is that they have this terrific mix of older buildings and older building stock against which the new things can dazzle. And Dallas, there's older building stock. As I said earlier, all those storefronts, all those two or three story mercantile buildings, a lot of the red brick that was here. You look at photos from the 40s and 50s. It's a completely different looking city. It's stone and brick, and that's all gone. Yeah.
It's amazing how much it's transformed. One of my colleagues at the news, Robert Wolanski, the great Robert Wolanski, recently posted this video made by, I think, the city of Dallas, and it was in the 50s, and it showed downtown, and it was to one of these videos that was going to show you, not a video, a film, 16 millimeter, that was going to show you what progress was going to be made in Dallas. And it showed Dallas, this vibrant city. The streets were packed, cars going one way and another, streetcars. And the premise of the film was that this was a problem, right? So we're going to get rid of that. We're going to make all the streets go one way. We're going to drive 75 right down into the city. And now there won't be traffic anymore. And the streets won't be crowded. And you'll be able to just drive everywhere and park. And of course, it's, you know, the city was incredibly proud of this. Was progress. This was modernity. This is what was going to make Dallas great. Of course, it was a completely destructive impulse. It's like this document of how the city killed itself.
Be careful what you wish for.
There you go.
Jerome Weeks is a reporter and a producer for KERA's Art and Seek and winner of the John G. Flowers Award for Excellence from the Texas Society of Architects. Mark Lamster is professor of architecture at UTA and architecture critic for the Dallas Morning News. He'll speak tomorrow night on the built environment in Dallas at the Horchow Auditorium. That's sponsored by the DMA and the Dallas Architecture Forum. Guys, thanks so much to both of you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Today's show was engineered by Justin Martin. Our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the free podcast at kera.org/think. Email us at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.